This podcast is brought to you by the Albany Public Library Main Branch and the generosity of listeners like you.
What is a podcast?
God, Daddy, these people talk as much as you do. Razib Khan's Unsupervised Learning.
Hey, everybody. This is Razib with the Unsupervised Learning Podcast. And today I am here with Stephen Kenneth Bonnell II. I got that from the internet. Also known as Destiny, a pretty well-known live streamer. I think you originally did a lot of gaming-related content on Twitch and other platforms. And then after about 2016, I think, I remember seeing you on a lot of political debate shows. And, one thing that I noticed about you is during the period when a lot of liberal or progressive, whatever you want to call it, influencers and commentators were, let's say they didn't want to platform other people that they disagreed with, so they just would not talk to them. You did not take that strategy, right? You talked to whoever, and so that's one of the reasons you're here, because I put the word out. I just wanted to actually have a discussion with someone who identifies as a liberal. About why they're a liberal, especially in this time when there's a lot of changes politically, both on the left and the right, with reconfigurations. And, just a lot of people are actually confused. They're uncertain. And some people are switching coalition positions. And there are issues where I don't know what the liberal or conservative position is anymore because they are switching around. I myself have been pretty much on the right my whole adult life, but I'm not a super political person. So I haven't thought that deeply on some of these questions, but I figure I just, reach out. And you obviously came and stepped forward, which I'm not entirely shocked by. And actually, years ago, my friend Ayla actually suggested that I have you on the podcast to talk about politics. I wasn't talking about politics too much then, so it kind of dropped by the wayside, but here you are. So. I guess this was perhaps inevitable. Before we start out, I guess maybe we should talk about definitions because, you're a liberal, I guess. Would you say you're a progressive? My impression from the clips and the videos that I've seen is you are definitely not on the left and definitely not on the right. But, you kind of take a, heterodox liberal position. That's what I say. What do you think?
I mean, it really depends on the topic and it depends on the platform and it depends on who I'm talking to. So for Israel-Palestine, if I'm in Israel, people would consider me fairly decently left. If I'm in the United States talking online in these circles, people would consider me like a rabid Zionist. I like guns. I like capitalism. I like redistribution. It really depends. I would say center left to far left, depending on, it's hard to, as you said, these political labels mean so many different things now, and they're applied in so many different ways. It's hard to know exactly what somebody is by just giving a political label for somebody.
Well, that's fair, and I think part of the way that people determine things is who you hang with, who your fellow travelers are, what your social circles are. So, my own positioning in a lot of ways, a lot of things, I'm not actually that socially conservative. But a lot of my friends in the political space are conservative. I'm writing an article for the American Conservative right now, actually. And I wrote for the American Conservative in 2003. So I have a connection to that wing of the right that goes way back. But I'm not necessarily, I support abortion rights, for example. I'm not very exercised about gay marriage, those sorts of issues. But, I have other opinions that make me on the right. Ultimately, people have a tribe and a faction that they end up being, pigeonholed into. But I get the sense that you resist that just because you're pretty vocal about all of your different views. Whereas a lot of times, if someone is off the reservation from their tribal position, they keep it on the down low a little bit, right? What do you think about that? Do you think that you're a little different that way?
Yeah, there's a lot that goes into this. It could be a content creation strategy. It can be a personally protective mechanism. It can be a tribal thing for social reasons or whatever else. But you kind of have to make a choice at some point in your political career in that, are you going to belong to a large political tribe or are you going to try to forge a path on your own? If you belong to a large political tribe, there's a lot of pros. You obviously get to inherit kind of that entire ecosystem. You get to be part of that environment. There's a lot of audience transfer that could happen. The messaging and the ideas and everything are very easy to understand and defend because you can see everybody else doing it. It's a fairly it's a simpler existence. Now, you're also competing with a lot of other people in that ecosystem. So if there's somebody that does what you do, but better, it's not like you can set yourself apart ideologically. Sometimes you might find yourself having to go along with ideas that personally you don't like as much. And now you kind of have to defend some things that you think are, silly or in the worst case, abhorrent. But that's kind of where your political tribe is at. So that can be annoying. And then if you ever want to leave, there's a huge cost that you have to pay there sometimes as well. If you go kind of the more independent route that I've gone, you don't get to inherit a political tribe of sorts. You don't get to inherit that audience. You kind of have to forge your own path on ideas and everything else. So you don't have as much kind of support from any larger structures or ecosystems, but you get the flexibility of exploring your own ideas. You're not necessarily held to defend things that you think are stupid. You're more flexible in who you can criticize and what ideas you can criticize. So yeah, at the end of the day, it's all kind of, if you're lucky enough to have a large enough audience, you could be super independent, but otherwise that could be quite difficult to do. And then it's just weighing the pros and cons of it, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you maintain, relative independence, but you're pretty big, player, in terms of, this sort of political commentator, influencer, so game, but a lot of people, that are big, they are very careful. Actually, in terms of their alliances and whatnot, right? That's a totally different strategy. And then, obviously, it's probably less stressful for them.
Yeah, arguably. Because you kind of have the playbook, basically. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but do you think you're just like particularly disagreeable? I mean, like, where does this particular, like, why did you choose the strategy? Do you think that's just like in your nature or is just a contingency?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably, I'm sure it's hard to say exactly, biological versus environmental growing up, but like I enjoy arguing with people. I'm relatively oppositional. If I'm in a room and nine people are saying the same thing, it kind of makes me want to, not necessarily take a disingenuous position, but like point out like, hey, I feel like we're missing this thing or you guys are being a little bit too one-sided. I think that's kind of just in my nature. So I kind of have more defense mechanisms against kind of like being in a group where everybody's just kind of like agreeing with each other. Sometimes this is good, sometimes this is bad. It's just a thing I'm aware of, and it probably leads me to being a little bit more independent than most.
Well, so we're talking about ideology, but what about partisanship? Are you, what do you think about the Democratic Party? What do you think about the Republican Party? Are you just much of a party guy, or are you just, that's more institutional stuff that you don't really have much truck with?
I mean, depending on where my particular policy beliefs are at a particular point in time is going to be who I'll all align with. So right now, I'm in pretty large alignment with the Democratic Party, a pretty huge disalignment or unaligned with the Republican Party. So I'm almost universally supporting kind of like blue or Democratic candidates right now and have been for quite a bit. Yeah.
I mean, in terms of your current incarnation, so what I read online is you used to be a libertarian, 15 years ago, right? Uh-huh. But in your current incarnation as, not a libertarian, more of a liberal, have you ever actually supported a Republican, or just, generally Democrats are, since they are the liberal party, that's who you vote for, right? Or I don't know.
I mean, I don't know if it counts much, but like my mom is Cuban, so I grew up in a very Republican household. So growing up, I was like a huge Republican defender. I wrote articles in my school newspaper defending George Bush and the Iraq War. But now this was like before I could vote. By the time I hit college in 2007, 2008, I was a huge Ron Paul supporter in that election. Again, kind of libertarian-esque. And then 2012, I don't know if I had strong opinions on like supporting particular politicians. And then in 2016, I became kind of more involved politically. I was kind of like a Bernie Sanders supporter, and then a little bit indifferent-ish maybe to that election. And then as time has gone on, I've been probably more and more aligned from 2016 onwards with the Democratic Party.
Yeah, I think also you're, you obviously will talk to conservatives and right-wing people, but you're very, very anti-Trump from what I can tell.
For sure.
Okay. And like, why are you particularly anti-Trump? Let me just like get that out of the way.
I mean, for any number of reasons. Depends on what you want to dive into. I think that on the broadest levels, I feel like he represents kind of the worst of the United States of America, kind of like a tasteless, gaudy, I don't even know if I'd call him a pseudo-intellectual, but just kind of like a stupid person who projects a lot of insecurity, wields his power in a highly irresponsible way. This could manifest on a foreign policy level, where I'd be very critical of him making military threats against allies like Greenland or Canada. The utilization of our military to, abduct Maduro was, I don't think that was proper. I think the way that we're engaged right now with Iran in the Middle East, I don't think is proper. I think that the general lack of IQ or just the lack of intelligence amongst him and his cabinet members just saying stupid things, like the fact that people take RFK seriously about literally anything, is kind of crazy to me. The fact that Donald Trump seems to pride himself in just not knowing anything about how government works or runs, the incompetency in the DOJ, the weaponization of law against people. We just had this indictment drop against Comey for the 8647 Seychelles. There's so much bad DOJ stuff. It depends on where you want to go. I could go into any number of topics. The general undermining of like the institutions of the United States, the general weakening of our position around the world through this kind of like false bravado and disregard for everybody else on the planet is deeply concerning to me. Yeah.
So if we had swapped out, like Ted Cruz, who is a very right wing, you know, individual, obviously, if he was president of the United States, do you think you would have the same reaction or a more moderate reaction? You know, I don't know. What do you think? I mean, I know like I'm doing counterfactuals here, but is there something particular about Trump's personality?
I hate a lot of what Trump is and what he represents. I would still be opposed to Ted Cruz, but it wouldn't be anywhere near as viscerally as I'm opposed to Donald Trump. Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, it's about, you mentioned institutions. I mean, Trump, whatever ideology you think he is, clearly he's anti-institutional. Uh-huh. And he is, whether you think it's right or wrong, he is attacking a lot of the foundations of the American establishment, right?
Yeah,
and like you're not a big fan of that. Going through the policies, people say that people will say things like, "Oh, well, I'm socially moderate and fiscally conservative, or I believe in a strong foreign policy." These sorts of things. Do you have any generalizations like that that you think of yourselves as being well defined by?
I mean, socially, I'd probably be considered quite left leaning, except for on like guns. It depends on what road you get on, but most people would consider me socially probably pretty far left. I would defend like healthcare interventions for like minor trans people. That would be quite a far left position, I think. In terms of fiscal stuff, I think I would be anywhere from center left to far left. It depends. The way that I characterize my view of economics is like I'm a huge believer that we need more investment in this country from like the lower and middle class into like upper class earning. I think that capital is very powerful today, and we need a way for more of us to have buy-in to kind of the wins that capital is getting to enjoy. But I believe that like market forces are real. I'm a big believer in capitalism. I think that incentive alignment is incredibly important, and that's how you fix most problems. It can't just be, like the Mamdani style, we're just going to make a grocery store and do price controls on everything. I don't think that works. So like I want to expand housing availability and access, but I hate like rent control. So we'd have to go policy through policy. But like I would say I'm like center leftish economically to far leftish. Like I'm in favor of redistributive things and changing incentives and alignments. But like I think that capitalism is important. I think that market forces are real. So like they would have to be done in accordance with those things.
That's my impression. I mean, in terms of you said capital, right now, at least in social media, there is a split between, I mean, often they're lawyers, around like Matt Stoller, those type of people that are against corporate power, against big corporate power and consolidation. And then you have other people like the Abundance Bros that are roughly on the other side when it comes to corporate power, I guess, in terms of they're not pro corporate power, but they think corporations are important in terms of providing supply side benefits. Like in terms of that type of debate, in the Democratic liberal, faction, like where would you generally side?
People want to assign normative value to everything on the planet, which I just think is stupid. Like corporations are firms that exist to maximize profit for the people that own them. Like that's it. Nothing more, nothing less. If a firm can maximize profit by providing some kind of social good or utility that benefits all of us, then they'll do that. If they can provide profit by abusing the environment and creating a whole bunch of negative externalities that ultimately kills us in the long term, they'll do that. You just have to understand that that's the function of a firm. And then ideally you have a government policy or structure that aligns the incentives with the firms with like a broader societal incentive. Like that's how I view it. So I'd definitely be more in line with an Abundance person than anybody making some concrete statement about how like corporations are evil or corporations are good.
Yeah, corporations just are.
They're there to maximize profits for those firms for their owners. That's it. Yeah,
exactly. In terms of like Abundance, I was listening to Ezra Klein's podcast. I think him, Derek Thompson was on, and a couple of other people, but they were talking about like where Abundance is, a year out. And, obviously Abundance ideas existed before, but it was kind of crystallized because of their book. And it seems like they're, you know, they're giving themselves mixed reviews. There's a lot of talk. There's a lot of chatter, and abundance ideas have hit. Some you know, Democratic leaders like Gavin Newsom and others have pointed to abundance ideas. On the other hand, you know, there hasn't been. I mean, housing is still crazy in California. You know, so like, what are the policy changes? You know, it seems like not that many. How do you feel about it? Do you think they're being too hard on themselves? Like, I'm not a liberal myself, but I have to be honest. I think, okay, like, you're asking for a lot after a year. I'm going to be honest. That's what I think. I think they probably are a little hard, too hard. Let's come back in 4 or 5 years. That was what I would say. But anyway, what do you think?
I view abundance conversations in a way, kind of like a guy asking, like what's the best way to increase my squat? But this guy just got done with like 6 months of chemotherapy, radiation, and he broke both legs and he's still like in physical therapy for him. It's like, that's like a really good conversation to have, but we're really, really far away from that right now. I think we have a lot more like of a fundamental problem in different areas in the United States that we kind of have to sort through before we can have things related to abundance conversations, you know, in my opinion. Or maybe like these could be done in conjunction with the other things. But like, I think right now the social media environment and the media environment at large, and then the political kind of entanglement with that media environment is very, very, very destructive to every conversation that could possibly be had in the United States. And that has to get figured out and sorted out before we can have meaningful conversations about policy, in my opinion.
Well, I guess, I think in terms of the social media environment, you're talking about like the culture war stuff, national culture war stuff that is looming over everything, right?
But or just like how the media environment controls so much. So here's an example. When we talk about housing, like that conversation, because of the media environment, I think the housing conversation starts with people complaining about rents, and then it presupposes the idea that we need to bring down rents, and then that's where the conversation has to be, and then that conversation is also held hostage by people that have the worst idea about how to bring down rents ever. But the reality is most people in the United States are in homes that are owned. They don't want to see the cost of rents or the cost of housing go down because it would hurt their most important investment, the biggest part of their net worth, which is their home. And they're not going to vote for things that are going to damage that. So we end up in this world where it feels like everybody is hurt by high cost of housing, but for some reason, nothing is ever getting done about it. And it's because your average voter base is not voting to do things that would harm their homes. But then the people that are talking about changing it, who don't even represent the average person, are also giving ideas that wouldn't even help, like things like rent control or building like public housing or whatever. So like, that's what I mean when I say like the social media environment. There are really good conversations we should have about housing and how to fix the housing problem, but nobody even knows like the distribution of homes in the United States and who's the most affected by it or wants to have conversations about how to change it like in a meaningful way. It's just kind of like slop policies for slopulous people who, you know, feels good to virtue signal about some particular thing they're saying.
Well, I mean, to be fair, though, my understanding is Seattle and Minneapolis, and this is like a, you know, blue state, blue city thing in general, but not exclusively. Seattle and Minneapolis have actually started to build enough that they are affecting some change, right? So there are what you're saying is obviously correct, especially in a place like California, where there's like the voter base is totally resistant. There are places where there is happening. There's some change that's happening. Like, you would concede that, right?
I'm sure there's some. I mean, I would have to go look at these particular markets, but usually it's like nibbling around the edges, you know?
Yeah. And then you have Texas where we have a different equilibrium here, you know? Like, if you don't come to Texas to, have housing as where your value is, where your wealth is, you know? Like, you just get a big house, you know, and it's, you know, high property taxes. So it's not like California or even Florida, to be honest. I think we have a different model here. And I think, we are actually living out abundance in some ways, you know, even though it's not a liberal state. Our solar build out is massive, not because we think solar is awesome and renewables awesome, that a lot of the people in Texas, the politicians, conservative politicians, actually like the vibes, the mood affiliation, they don't like it. But you know what? In Texas, you can build anything. Well, not anything, but you can build really easily. So they're building, right? So, for example, actually, this is kind of, I don't know what you think about this. We had this like monkey god statue in Houston, and the local Baptists are like pretty much like freaking out about it, you know, because, oh, there's a demon statue that you can see from the freeway, right? Issue here is, you know, like I've talked to people about this. This is Texas. Like, if you have a piece of property and it's not in the middle of the city, you could do almost anything with it, as long as it's not like dangerous, you're not building a nuclear power plant, right? Uh-huh. If you were in Connecticut, there's no way that they would allow a monkey god statue to be built because, you know, they'd be like, oh, it's an eyesore. We need to get like community approval and all this stuff, right? So, you know, this is like this weird situation where, Texas is, you know, I think like living out like some principles of liberty that you know, coastal states like supposedly promote, but because of their you know, regulatory environment, their cultural norms, it's just, it doesn't execute. There's like, there's a difference between, you know, what people say they want as policy and then what actually gets enacted in the real world. Just because, as you say, I say, as a more libertarian person, that market forces work.